Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Brighton Business Show with me, Lisa Moore, and what should be my fellow co-host, Helen Packham, who is sadly at home isolating with COVID, and her daughter has it too. So sending you lots of love, Helen. I hope that you will both be better in time for Christmas and feeling not too bad. So the Brighton Business Show, we're here to introduce you to amazing businesses that we have in our midst here in Brighton and Hove and also across the region. We love to find out the personal stories behind the business and actually find out how it all works. The Brighton Business Show is here on Radio Reverb at 97.2 FM, available on DAB Digital Radio. You can listen again from our website and also download our podcast on all our favourite channels. So this is December, the last Brighton Business Show of the year. And we thought today that what would be a good idea is to look at businesses going forward and how we can all ride the storm into 2022 with a positive attitude. And I have three fantastic guests today. I have Farhan, who is here from he's an insolvency practitioner. He will be talking to us first. And then we have the lovely Andrew Abaza, who is a business coach, and then Alex Ryan, who is a marketing expert. So hopefully you will have some wonderful hints and tips, and we will be able to give you some great advice for your business going forward in 2022. Let me introduce Farhan. So I mentioned that Farhan is an insolvency practitioner and he's licensed by the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales. Farhan, it's really lovely to have you on the show. And this is the first time that I have introduced an insolvency practitioner on the show. And I think it's actually a really important business to talk about because there are lots of companies out there that at times have found themselves in financial difficulties. So tell me a little bit about when do businesses tend to contact you?
Right. Thank you for having me, Lisa. Yes. As I said, I'm an insolvency practitioner. And on a daily basis, what we do is we help businesses deal with financial problems. They tend to contact us, depends on the structure they are. Sole trader, for example, they contact us when they are they're overburdened with loans or tax liabilities. Company director, when they cannot trade anymore. So on daily basis, what we see is people with financial problems. They can be financial problems because of different reasons. They could be change of job, change of circumstances, change of family structure, bad investment, multiple reasons for being in that situation. And nowadays, what we see is that talking about financial problem is not easy, but with lockdown, it's become more cumbersome. And financial worries impact family and mental health of the individual. And it becomes so complicated for people to deal with it because they don't know the solution. So this is where we come in. We as insolvency practitioner, we listen to people's financial problem, understand their situation, understand the mental health issue, and then provide them with the options.
Yeah, so you give them all the advice that they need. And it's really lovely to hear that you take into account the mental health issues because, you know, certainly for many, many people over the last nearly 2 years, finance and money has been a really big thing to worry about.
Absolutely. It's very difficult. And especially when we see the mental health aspect of businesses going down and with COVID, and we had two. If you think about it, we had two major disruptions in the last 2 years. So we had Brexit, failing margins, and we had COVID. And you cannot, many businesses were not, like, you know, they couldn't plan for it. And they didn't have, they were not funded enough to deal with these kind of issues.
No, absolutely. And yeah, you're right, because of, we weren't aware of what Brexit really was going to bring, even though, you know, the government and the politicians tried to sort of tell us what to expect. But I don't think they even knew what to expect. And COVID, of course, came out of the blue, and not many of us have, you know, were prepared for that. So I'd love to really understand, what is the challenge that you face as an insolvency practitioner?
Well, as insolvency practitioner dealing with insolvent cases, the key challenge we have is satisfying all the stakeholders. I'll give you an example. For example, if I'm closing down a cafe, their employees, their shareholder, their director, their landlord, council, and each one of them with their competing interests. And we have to, and it becomes literally impossible to satisfy them all. What we do as insolvency practitioners is try to rescue the business, save jobs, maximize the value for the stakeholder. And that becomes the challenge. So this is the key challenge in insolvent situation.
Yeah, so you're actually trying to help to rescue the situation, to solve a situation.
Absolutely. Mostly we try to rescue, always try to rescue the business first. We see, like, if you think of UK businesses as national asset, so what we do is we play our role in moving the businesses from inefficient, under-resourced, underfunded hands to more resourceful, efficient hands.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really good. So if we have somebody that's listening, you know, one of our listeners might be listening right now and thinking, oh, I'm not sure whether I should contact somebody or not. So what would you say are the key warning signs that a business is in financial difficulties or distress? What's the best thing to look for?
Very good question. Businesses can avoid insolvency if they take action before it's too late. And if I look back at my 20 years of experience in this field and from the research which Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales have done, they've highlighted six key points, six warning signs you can have. If you have them in business, it means you need to look for some sort of recovery measure. So, and they're very logical, very simple. When you think about it, it's just like, you know, you can see, oh, yes, yeah, it's like common, like, you know, common thing, common sense issue. For example, cash is king. Yeah. So if there's more money going out than coming in, there's an issue. Unless, of course, you're well-funded and it's deliberate. But if it's not, make a note of it. When you go to banks and then they're charging you higher rate of interest, what does it mean? It means that financial institutions or lender, they're not very comfortable with lending you money. They're not comfortable with your viability. And if they think of you as high risk, it's probably the time you need to, like, you know, it's a warning sign for you. Defaulting on bills, not like one bill missed because, like, you know, you didn't see it, but constantly firefighting. And this is what we see. When we see directors coming to us with insolvent businesses, they can see that they didn't have cash. They had cash flow problem. Banks were charging them higher rate of interest. They were constantly defaulting on bills. But what I see, like, you know, it's interesting. You see something like not chasing the invoices. So you provided the service, but you're not chasing the invoice.
Okay,
it just shows that you're not efficient in running your business. Or I say Brexit effect. Margins are going down on certain products or market is changing and you cannot charge the same kind of margins which you used to. And so many businesses have not adapted themselves to it. And in general, I think it's a gut feeling. If you as an entrepreneur, as a business manager, if you're there and you're unhappy with the business, it shows that there is something wrong. So if you think, as it's like, I'll list them down again for you. If cash flow is an issue, if bank is charging you higher rate, if you're defaulting on bills, if you're not chasing enough, you're not running it efficiently, your margins are going down, or generally unhappy in the business, these are the key warning signs for the businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, cash is king. You're absolutely right. You know, without good cash flow, business struggles.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so many times I see businesses chasing the turnover. So they are losing money on one product. So instead of selling 10 products, they want to sell 100 of those products. Of course, it means they're coming up with more losses.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, moving on from that, what should they do? What's the first step that they should do?
Depends on the structure. For example, if they are sole trader, partner in a partnership, so if there's personal debts, what I tend to say to people, first thing you must do is list down all of your borrowing. Very common sense thing. So I can tell you in my 20 years of insolvency work, so many times people come to us and they don't know how much debt they have.
Yeah.
And so they have rough idea, but don't know. So list down all of your loan, all of your credit card, all the fines, rent arrears, mortgage arrears, legal bills, list them up. Prepare an income and expenditure form. So you know your income, but your outgoings. And trust me, every time I go and have this kind of webinars, and you say, do you know how much it costs to rent your house? And I would say 70, 80% of the people don't know their household bills. So they don't know their kitchen bills. They don't know, they have a rough idea of their energy bill, but they don't know exactly the bills. So what you need to do is list down all the expenses, all the rent, mortgages, household expenses, bills, children pocket money, every single thing, so that you know what sort of income you need to have, what kind of expenses you have. Once you've done these things, then you know how much debts you have, you know what sort of income you have. So if you approach licensed insolvency practitioner, or you think about it, you can find solution. And there are different solutions. For example, you can have informal agreement with your lenders. You can have a payment plan. You may qualify for debt relief order. You can have time to pay with HMRC for your tax liabilities. Maybe bankruptcy is a good option. Or you can consider something which we call individual voluntary arrangement.
Okay. I've heard of that, but I can't honestly say I know what it is. So
individual voluntary arrangement, or IVA, they were on monthly basis, I would say in October just gone, we had 7,000 IVAs in UK. So an IVA is basically a legally binding formal agreement between you and your creditors. Last 5 to 6 years. And at the end of your IVA, your unsecured debt is written off. So I'll give you an example to understand this. For example, there's a builder, and the assets he has is only equity in the house, which is 50,000. Now, his liabilities are credit card loans, tax liability, other legal bills are more than 100,000. So instead of going bankrupt, because if he's to go bankrupt, he's going to lose his house, what he can do is he can propose a voluntary arrangement. Because if he has a surplus income, in this case, this is actually an example with a person I helped. So he had £1,000 of surplus income, and he managed to get into a voluntary arrangement and pay his debts within 5 years. So the reason people go into voluntary arrangement is, one, to avoid bankruptcy. Second, mostly if they are homeowner, they do not want to lose their house.
Yes.
And because IVA kind of offer affordable monthly payments, it's easier to do it. And if you are in a professional job, like you're a solicitor, police officer, accountant, then if you were to go bankrupt, you tend to lose your job. So it's easier for them to propose a voluntary arrangement as opposed to going into bankruptcy.
So that's for sole traders, is it?
That's for sole trader. And similarly, same thing could happen for the company. But for companies, again, as I said, IVAs, there were 7,000 IVAs in October 2021. CVAs, which is company voluntary arrangement, more or less the same thing, a legally binding formal agreement between company and its creditors. There were 16 of them. So it's a huge difference. The reason is, if the company is insolvent, but they have CVAs only viable if the business is viable. So there is a good business, creditors like you, they know why you are in that position, and whatever the fundamental weakness of the business was resolved. So then you can go into company voluntary arrangement. I'll give you example of a cafe. So they, because of COVID and everything, they were they had massive liabilities. They had £160,000, which was landlord, tax, legal issues, and but they could afford to make £1,500. They could afford to make payment of £1,500 per month. And they proposed a CVA, which meant that they avoided liquidation, so avoided closing down the business. So business was secure, employment was secure, and director retained control of the business. So CVA could be very good, but the reason their numbers are quite low is because it requires an insolvent business to have a viable business, like insolvent company to have viable business. So if the business is viable, if creditors are happy with what you're doing, you tend to get, you can get a CVA.
Yeah, Yeah, and so with both of those examples, the business can carry on. Is that
With
right?
CVA, yes, of course, the business carries on and directors retain control of the business.
Okay, and what about with an IVA? Can a sole trader carry on with the
Yeah, of
business?
course, of course, of course. And again, if they are solicitor, their accountant, or their barristers, like I had a barrister, and their loans were £250,000. So huge because of many things, the negative equity in the house, the bad investment. But his equity in one, like the asset he had was 100,000. And he proposed a VA, but he continued working as a barrister. So he retained his job and ensured that he paid enough money to the creditors so that they don't make him bankrupt.
So actually, just as a side, talking about those options, and you mentioned about people losing their jobs and things like that. When you hear the word bankruptcy or liquidation and things like that, there's a lot of, what's the word?
Stigma.
Negative stigma to it. Do you think that is always going to be there, or do you think?
Okay, depends, because we live in this society where people are borrowing a huge amount of money. So it's like, think about, when I think about my mom, she would not, she won't go to the bank, borrow money. Credit
No.
cards were not for her. But we
No.
live in this society where everybody has credit cards, everybody has leased cars, and these sort of things. So yes, and bankruptcy, if you think about the legislation, the bankruptcy is basically bankruptcy protection. So once you go bankrupt, it gives you a fresh start. Once you go into individual voluntary arrangement, it gives you another opportunity. Once the company has gone into some sort of liquidation, it gives you another opportunity to restart afresh. CVA, you safeguard the business. So yes, these opportunities are there for businesses using the insolvency legislation, but the stigma is still there, not as much as it used to be. But people can, if they were to use insolvency legislation in an appropriate way, yes, they can benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I know there's loads of different things that you can help us with, but I was wondering, because we're coming up to Christmas, what is usually the worst time of year for financial problems? Is it now or is it other times?
I would say with my 20 years of experience in this, January tend to be the busiest month for us in terms of taking calls. The reason, one is if you're self-employed, then there's a tax payment which is due in January. Second, when you don't have, you tend to, I've seen people spend more money when they don't have money. So if you don't have money, you tend to buy expensive gifts, and it's I don't know how, I don't know how you justify, but yes, this is what happens. And these bills turn up in January. So we get a lot more calls in January. And I think maybe because you get time off in December during Christmas time, you think about your debts, and in January it becomes toughest for people. We get and this year I think it's going to be even toughest because added pressure of energy prices going up and grocery general, kitchen expenses going up. So yes, we think January would be really difficult for lots of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what would be your biggest message for our listeners? If anybody resonates with any of the points that you've made, what would be your biggest message?
My message would be, we as insolvency practitioner, we are here to help the business in difficult times. I believe that as many people are suffering in silence and they don't seek advice until it's too late. Most people, when they are dealing with their borrowing, and they come to us late, or should I say later than when I expect them to be. So certainly the message is to seek early advice. Insolvency practitioner in general, and we at Jeremy Knight & Co, we provide free initial advice. So if you are in debt, contact a competent insolvency practitioner as soon as possible. And if people approach insolvency practitioner early on, there are better chances to protect their businesses, protect the employment, and achieve a better result for everybody concerned.
Absolutely. So if people wanted to get in touch with you, Farhan, how could they do that? What's the best way?
They can email, they can telephone, I'll drop the number. They can call my office, which is 01273-203-654. They can email us. They can go on our website, which is www.jeremyknight.com. brightonbusiness.co.uk. And plus, what we'll be doing is for January, as I want people to be free from their worries of debts, we will be running Freedom Friday sessions in January. There's any local business who is they're struggling, it could be sole trader, partner in partnership, charity, company director. If you are struggling, contact us and join us on a session. It can be one-to-one or a group session, and it's free for our listeners.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, actually, and I'm sure that a lot of people listening will be sighing with relief that knowing that there is help and support out there for them. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I know perhaps we've started the show off on maybe a bit of a downer, but I think it's really important information to get out there, that people understand that there are options. You don't have to just suffer in silence, and contact somebody like Farhan who can help with that. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa.
Lisa Moore for the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM, available on DAB Digital Radio, to listen again on our website or download as a podcast on one of your favourite channels. So we're going to have a look a little bit more at business and positivity, and my next guest, Andrew Abaza from Action Coach, will give us, I'm sure, some wonderful information and insight into his many years of experience in business. So, Andrew, welcome to the show. Lovely to see you.
Hello. Great to be here.
So I remember when we spoke, and I said to you, what do you do? And one of the things you said is that you help business owners to grow their business and to make more money, which
that's right.
Sounds fantastic. So you have lots of experience as a business coach, but also yourself in your own businesses. I believe you run a couple of businesses in the past. So tell us a little bit more about what you do and how you do it.
Right. So, yes, I mean, in some ways, what I do sounds like a bit of a black art, doesn't it? You know, trust me, you know, I hope you grow your business and make more money. You know, darts trying to turn to bowl three times and everything will be fine. So I wish it was quite as simple as that. But what I do, it's what I say. I do help business grow and make money. And especially thinking about as we come out of maybe go into lockdowns next year, who knows, is that I suppose that there's four things maybe to think about as a business, four straightforward things. I love simples, by the way. I love simplicity, not make it complicated. And as we come into the new year, I think the first thing is to think of a plan. Now, not a boring old business plan with 20 pages long that no one reads. No one's going to do that. I think something much simpler than that. And that is, think even just 3 months ahead. Come Easter, where does your business want to be in Easter? You know, what does it look like? And what are the key activities? Where's your focus going to be to get there? And that's a great thing to just stick it up a bit of paper on your office, where you want to be in 3 months' time, and what are the major things you've got to focus on? It could be sales, could be marketing, it could be dealing with your people. So that's one great thing to do, and very simple to do. And something else to think about is time. And I'm not talking about time management here, because that's boring. Everyone talks about time management. I'm talking about, where's your focus going to be? And I have a very simple rule for that, is that what I found speaking to business owners, that they waste a lot of time doing shiny new things. I said, if time doesn't add value to what you're doing, doesn't make you money, don't do it. And if you are going to do something else, why are you doing it? And it's a ruthless rule, but my goodness, it doesn't have to chop out all the useless stuff that people like to do. And it's so important to do that.
That whole bright shiny object thing, yeah. Isn't it? That looks interesting and interesting and fun, and I'm going to just pop off and do that. And yeah, I've been guilty of that myself, knowing that I've wasted time on things that actually don't generate what I need.
Yeah, and exactly right. And just by doing that has a massive difference, I've found, with speaking to business owners. And the third thing to think about, again, going to New Year, is people. And lockdown has had a massive effect. You've already spoken about it earlier, you know, the mental health issues and so on. And it's had a huge effect on people. And what I find speaking to business owners is that people have changed attitudes. They want more from work. They have a different expectations of work. You know, the big debate about hybrid working, all this type of thing, you know, should you come back to the office or not, all this sort of stuff. And the key thing for me, for a business owner, is to decide to set the rules of the game, if you like. In other words, how do they want their people to work in consultation with them in terms of what's right for the business? Because if the business owner doesn't set the rules, the people will. And then you have anarchy and then disorganization of business. And I think the debate about, for example, hybrid working is a false one. What it should be about is what's right for the business and the people in it. And out of that will come the right working method. So I think a key message is people understand where they're coming from, set the rules of the game for them as to what's right for them. And the last thing, but in many ways, perhaps the most important, is money. As Fahim said earlier, no, you've got to get cash, no cash, no business. And as I think Alex will be talking about is marketing. Yes, you've got to get money into the business. You've got to get people coming interested in what you do. Absolutely key, especially the harder the times, the more marketing you need. I'm on commission from Alex for this, by the way.
There's some really great advice about marketing
Keep getting, no matter how hard it is, you've got to get out there and do it. And that's essential. Get people into your pipeline. Get people coming up to it. Where I find things start to go awry, how do you pronounce it? Awry after that, is that sales. What happens when someone walks into your office or you go out and see someone and say, yep, I'm interested in what you've got and I want to buy it. What do you do? What do you say? How do you actually make them give you money for what you're doing? What's your sales process? How do you follow up when they say, well, come back to me, or give you some other objection, some other excuse? And something I spend a lot of time on is helping business owners with that sales process. In other words, how do you get them to give you money for what you do? And it people tend to forget that. You can always just say, please give me some money. And that tends not to work. And people feel funny about sales. And what I tend to say, sales is about helping people to buy. People don't want to be sold to, they want to buy. And that's a key, absolutely key aspect of the business. And finally, coming back to cash, it's actually making sure that there is cash in the business. As Fahim said earlier, no cash, no business. And it's actually making sure you've actually got cash, you know where you are with your cash. And also a piece of advice, get your accountant to do a forward cash flow for your business, i.e. thinking ahead 2-3 months, how much cash you've got coming in, what are your outgoings, and can you afford to keep going? Otherwise, you have to go and see fire. So that's a simple rule. So that's really the major four. So just 4 points. Have some kind of plan for what you're going to do. Make sure you actually sort your time out. You don't waste it. And if it doesn't add value, don't do it. Make sure your people are okay. You've got rules of the game. And finally, get money into your business and make sure you manage your cash so that you've actually got a viable business, you know, come 3 months' time. And that if you do those four things, generally speaking, your business will be fine. And you'll be a happy person. Yeah. And that's what it's all about. And why shouldn't business owners be happy? Why have a miserable life? Get a life.
Well, I mean, a lot of business owners set up their own business to escape working for somebody else so that they can do the things that they love to do. Yeah. But it's quite easy to get into a situation where, yes, you actually start off doing what you love to do, but then all the other bits and pieces come in, like credit control and accounts, sales and marketing and PR and this, that and the other, that is not the thing you got into the business to do in the first place. No. And then you can become overwhelmed.
Yeah, so you got it.
You work with people that are starting a business. You work with people that have run a business for a while. Is that correct?
I do work with startups, but it's not my primary primary market. The main market is people, or the people who benefit most are people who are already into a business or already rolling with it. People who want to move to the next level in their business. For example, I was working with a computer services business, turning over about 200,000 a year, run by two businesses. It's absolutely fine, but they wanted to go up a gear. And they wanted to move on from that. And that's where I usually start. Another example is working with a paint and decorating company. They had about 370 quid in the bank at the beginning of this year. And they're now getting in about £7,000 a month turnover, which is not bad. And so people actually want to move up a gear from where they are. Some people are happy where they are, and that's fine. You know, that's fine. But people actually need to move on. And that's the kind of businesses that, that benefit most from what I do.
Yeah. And so how do you do that? You know, if you have a business that wants to move to the next level, what's the first thing that you would do with that business or that person if they came to you?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I do, I have a process for making sure, first of all, that what I do will work. Are they coachable? Will it work for them? That's absolutely critical. And that involves a short call of about 30 minutes to find out, you know, what their issues are. And then a 90 minute, I don't put a stopwatch on it, but it's give or take 90 minutes where we talk about, you know, what the issues are. It's a kind of like a taster session for a coaching session, if you like, a strategy session. And if that works, then there's all kinds of different things I can do with business owners. One-to-one coaching, a bit like sports coaching. You know, people go to the gym. Why are they going to the gym? Are they using the right sort of equipment? Are they using it in the right sort of way? How do they measure what they're doing? So I have one-to-one coaching programs. I do group coaching programs where people come together on a weekly or every 2 weeks. And I also do spot work. And what I mean by that, for example, I had a meeting yesterday with a business that, you know, just needed to get going. You know, that they just, what do I do? So we had a 2-hour planning session, if you like, to get going. So I do a variety of different things depending on where the business is coming from. It's always following where the business owner is.
Yeah. And I guess, from, you know, listening to you talk about spot sessions from a, you know, a life coaching point of view, which is, you know, where I come in, I would call that a breakthrough session where you look at one specific problem and you unpick that problem. So you then have a plan or you have clarity on the next steps forward.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, those types of situations are really useful sometimes. You know, you get stuck and you just need that person to talk to just pull it apart a bit and perhaps sometimes to have them put the mirror up. You a bit, you see the things that really need to be changed.
Yeah. I'm going to pinch that phrase from you, breakthrough session. It's a great expression.
The group coaching is interesting. So I've been involved myself with masterminds over the years where, you know, with different business owners. So do the group coaching sessions work in that way where people sort of help each other or are you leading the group?
It's both. I lead the group to obviously provide direction, and the purpose of the group is to provide action. It's not, the whole point of coaching. What I do is not to talk about stuff; it's to do something. Otherwise, you know, why bother? Anyone can talk about it. So the group's coaching is partly about agreeing actions and provide learning, and also people do help each other. They come up with some great ideas in terms of their own experience, and it's a great way of doing stuff. Yeah.
And I guess it also provides that a safe space for people to talk about things openly and creates that support network. Because I think, you know, being a sole trader, a single business owner, it can be quite a lonely place. And I'm sure there are lots of listeners out there that are on their own running their businesses that are thinking, this is a really quiet, lonely place. I go and talk to.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely key. You're right, business owner, it can be a very lonely thing because you're on your own, huge pressures from all over the place. And everyone telling you what to do, of course. Everyone's full of advice of business owners. So a group coaching environment, as indeed a one-to-one coaching environment, is a great way to actually work with someone like me who can actually be quite objective about stuff and give a lot of moral support as well as just harassing people. So yeah, it's a great place to be, especially the group coaching one. Yeah.
And I sort of talked about this at the beginning that, you know, you yourself have run two businesses in the past.
Yes. Yeah.
And therefore coming at it from a place of experience.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about, you don't have to tell us about both businesses, but tell us about all of the businesses you ran. What were the biggest lessons that you learned?
Oh, well, I've got loads of medals from that, half which I don't want. but yes, it was actually a business here in Brighton, based what was then Brighton Poly. We had some government money to kick off, and it producing open learning materials for engineers. And we had a great business model and a great design. And we grew from, well, nothing to about 4 million turnover in 4 years. We grew from about 6 people to 49 in the same period. And we also developed the same methodology for the health service training, nurses and others in non-clinical training called Health Pickup. Great product, great ideas, great growth. And that was great for 2.5 years. We're what we'd now call a market disruptor. You know, we completely sort of broke apart the existing marketing training, which was really good. We did some great stuff. But, and so great fun. First 2 years, great fun, you know, but we're running on emotion. Nothing wrong in that in business. But then after that, of course, things like strategy, planning, dealing with people properly, a sales process, and all the essentials in a business, including managing our cash properly, fine, if he's listening, we weren't doing that properly. And so the result is, it nearly killed me because you just keep going harder and harder and harder. And after 4 years, we did sell the business to a large education group, but we didn't make much money on it. And it nearly did for me. And I learned from that. First, we had great fun doing the emotional stuff. It's great fun, you know, getting out. I learned from that. And I learned also that it's great fun to break things apart, you know, the traditional ways of doing it. Fantastic. And I still encourage people to do that. I don't know if I should admit that, but I do. But secondly, what I did learn, the importance of what I do now, which is sustainable growth. I have some kind of plan, however simple it is, have some kind of process for what you do. Deal with your people properly. Manage your cash, right? Yes, manage your cash properly so you know what the hell's going on. And that's why I do what I do now, because I've been there. I've done it. I know what can go wrong. And I know how to get a life from being a business owner rather than just killing yourself. And that's so important.
It's so absolutely important. And I think that's a really brilliant message to leave our readers with, that yeah. the lessons that you've learned, you're now able to share with people for the future.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, if people wanted to get hold of you or, you know, where's the best place for them to...
There's two simple ways. I mean, just Andrew Abaza, Action Coach, bang that into Google and you'll find my website. And the details are all there. And that's the simplest way to do it, if that makes sense. And there's not many Andrew Abazas around. In fact, I think I'm the only one. So if you just key it into the website, find the website, and all my details are there, including what to do and so on. That's the simplest way of doing it.
Excellent. And have you got any sort of plans coming up for next year, or any, you know, offerings that any business owners in Brighton and Hove might be able to take up?
I'm going to be running more webinars and short workshops on a variety of subjects. So look out for that on the website, especially things like sales and time. So I'll be running specialist workshops for people. That'll be broadcast shortly for the new year.
Excellent. That's lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been lovely to chat to you. And now we sort of move into really running a business and one of the critical aspects of running a business, and that's we're going to talk about marketing. So I'm going to bring Alex in. Alex is a marketing consultant and owner of agency Marketing 101, but I think it's a fairly new business. You've got quite an interesting story behind that, Alex, so I would love you to share with us that story.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me on, Lisa. Greatly appreciate it. Yeah, lovely to see Andrew and Farhan as well. Know them both well, very, very, very well, probably too well. Let's be honest. We see each other on an almost weekly basis. So nice to see them as well. excuse me. Yeah. So Marketing 101, I launched it during the pandemic, as a lot of people did. Saw opportunities for new business and for kind of life-changing activities. And yeah, so prior to that, I was with a company based in Shoreham called Paladone, who, you know, one of the main designers and manufacturers of gadgets, gifts, toys, movie merchandise around the whole world, one of the top players there. And I was heading up their marketing department. And the pandemic struck. I furloughed my entire global team. I furloughed myself. And I can't really sit idle. I'm not that kind of person. I have ADHD and I embrace it. So I decided to spend my time effectively doing voluntary marketing. I made a little brand, The Furloughed Marketer, practiced my web design skills, built myself a brand and a website, and then went out to LinkedIn and my network, offering voluntary marketing support for anyone that was struggling with trading at the very beginning of that pandemic. So that's where it all started. Did that for 3 months, worked with about 30, 35 businesses. And then of course, as you would, I saw the opportunity to take that and make it into a real monetized business rather than a voluntary business. And the rest is history. That was probably about 18 months ago that I first came up with the brand Marketing 101 and started charging, basically, which, as Andrew and Farhan would both tell you, is good practice, I've heard.
I think it is quite good practice, actually. Probably a good plan. So this is your business completely now. So marketing, I think the first thing to define, actually, because I remember I always struggled with this in the beginning, is marketing, PR and sales. They're all quite, or advertising. Yeah, advertising, marketing, PR and sales. They all sort of integrate. What is marketing?
Okay, no, I'm glad you asked that question. And actually, it's really important because I've got a beautiful a couple of sections to run you through in a second. You asked for some tips for 2022 and for the new year, so I've got loads of stuff there. But it is important to define it first, and people do get confused. The kind of the standard definition of marketing is the attraction and retention, that bit's important, of customers at a profit, that bit's also important. So attraction and retention of customers at a profit, that's the dictionary definition. And I always like to remind people of that, because attraction is very much an inbound phrase. You're drawing people in. And that's where that's the difference, the core difference between marketing and the other items that you mentioned, PR, sales, advertising. That is outbound. That's going out. That is reaching out and positioning yourself in front of people and trying then to draw them into your attraction model. So marketing for me is very much about doing the right thing, taking care of your brand, being excellent to your customers, providing value, and really just making sure that they're going to come back and use you time again and refer you onwards. That's the theoretical difference between marketing and those other items.
That's fantastic. And I think you've given a very clear definition for us, and that makes much more sense. Much more sense.
Good.
And the pandemic, we've all suddenly become very digital, very used to online. And as again, we are recording this show on Zoom and not in the studio. So we are using the digital format. I can see you all here on my screen. And you mentioned that you're going to give us some marketing tips for now and the future. So digital obviously plays a big part in marketing at the moment. What are your marketing tips?
Well, the first, actually, you brought, as you introduced me, you referred to marketing as critical to business. I'm glad you mentioned that, because a lot of businesses seem to think that it isn't. And actually, a lot of businesses tend to float through those first years and find growth, and maybe it's because of their existing network, maybe it's just they have a great product, it's a bit of luck, they go viral. But actually, it's really important to consider your marketing and look at it with a real kind of an umbrella overview. And that's so the tips I've got for you, they're split into kind of three sections. We've got a health check, which you're going to do at the end of the year. We've got some New Year's resolutions. And then after New Year's resolutions, I'll just show you a couple of bits which I think are really unique to 2022. The first two bits you should be doing at the end of any given year, I think. So we'll dive in. The first one is a review, of course. There's loads of things you can look at when you're doing a review of your previous year. But the main ones I think that maybe people don't think about are these. So first of all, Google yourself. Go onto an incognito window or a computer that you've never logged on before. Google yourself. Do you like what you see? Really, really important, because that is what everyone else sees. That's your shop window. So Google yourself and see what comes up first, because so often a different page to your homepage, or what you think is going to come up comes up.
Let me ask you a question. How do you log in as incognito? If you don't have access to somebody else's computer, how do you do that? Is it easy? Because I wouldn't.
Yeah, it is really easy. So, I mean, just taking Chrome as an example, up at the top right of Chrome, there's a three dotted menu bar. Click the three dots and it says open an incognito window. It's very simple. And all browsers have that same function, some kind of drop down menu, open incognito. So that's that one. Google yourself. We do lots of reviewing, obviously, in data, but simple things that I think you can look at really quickly. If you know, not every business has loads of time for marketing and reviewing and this kind of stuff, but look at which of your social media's posts performed the best. Is there a trend? Same with your blogs. Jump onto your analytics. Which of your blogs were read the most? Is there a trend? Same with your events. Which events worked that you attended, if you did or if you didn't? Ones that you did attend, obviously, and which of those worked? And exactly the same with your emails. Which of your emails worked and which didn't? We're talking, you know, kind of newsletter e-blasts here. And is there a trend beneath those subject lines? And that's the important thing here. We're looking for trends. Was it the ones where you were doing a sales message on your social media or your emails or your blogs? Did they work really well for you? Or was it where you went down a different route of trying to deliver some other kind of value? Is that what really worked for you? So try and figure out those trends. That's going to steer you well for 2022.
And I imagine that depending on the type of business you are, certainly, you know, in the area of health and wellbeing that I'm in, I know for a fact that when I'm talking and sharing personal stories or client stories and it's much more about the emotion behind things, that's where I get the most engagement.
Absolutely.
You'll get different trends depending on different types of business, I guess.
Yeah, it's generally accepted now that showing a bit of your true colors is really a good thing to do within your blogs, your social media. And that's why marketing is so important. Advertising still holds its place. But really being native and organic and genuine about what it is you're selling, the people behind the brand, the story behind the brand. And you know what? Give everything, put everything on a plate, especially if you're in the businesses that some of us are in on the call today, where you're doing consultancy. There's nothing like giving away all your secrets, because you will persuade by giving everyone everything. You will persuade people that they need to do it, but they still won't have time or necessarily be bothered or the skill set to do it themselves. So they will come back to you. Give away as much value as you can. That would be my tip there, definitely.
That's very interesting, because I know people worry about giving away their intellectual property. Is probably the wrong phrase, because I know that is a specific thing, but giving away too much, because then I think the mindset can be, well, if I tell them everything they need to know on a live video or a blog or a newsletter or an ebook, then why will they come to me?
So there's a common mistake people make, which is they think they need all the customers. They don't need all the customers. They just need some of the customers. They need enough of the customers. So if you put all of your secrets into a beautiful website or blog and you have 100 people visit it, how many of those customers do you actually need to convert? So what if 50 or 60 or 70 of them do somehow find it to take it upon themselves and do all of your work that you've suggested? Yes. If those 30 don't, and they come to you and say, I love it, I just haven't got the time, is that enough? That's probably enough customers, 30. Yeah. Right? That's the point. And it's the same with everything. You know, you don't need to run a marketing campaign that appeals to everyone. You just need to run a marketing campaign that appeals to someone and enough people. If I got, 1,000 customers tomorrow, I wouldn't be able to cope with it. And that'd probably be the same with all of us. So you don't need to do people pleasing, grab everyone. A good point, because a lot of people feel that way.
Yes, and actually I guess also that 70% of people that might take away all the stuff could possibly then go on to tell 10 of their friends, and that's how the web grows, doesn't it?
Perfect. Absolutely. Yeah, give someone everything and they'll remember you and they'll love it. Maybe they sign up to your mailing list and you have that brand awareness, and next time someone says, oh, I'm having a real problem with time in my business, they'll remember, I followed this guy's instructions, head over to Mr. Andrew Bazza's domain and yeah. and talk to him. He's the guy to help. So yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, who is the first tip that people need to do?
Say again, sorry?
Reviewing where they are is the first tip.
Under reviewing just falls two other bits. And this is probably the next one's probably a bit more Andrew's realm, which is I always like to get people to think about their Pareto theory at the end of each year. Pareto being the law of 80-20%, and which aligns with so many things in business. And the rule within business says, generally speaking, 80% of your revenue comes from just 20% of your customers. Often that's because of repeat business. But most likely you're putting 80% of your efforts into that 20% of customers, either because they're new or they're just awkward or needy customers that use up a lot of your time. So is there a way you can address this? And it's one of these things that people, experts like us, like to talk about and throw that, oh, just address your Pareto theory. We love to say it. It's really hard to do, but it is life-changing for a business. It can really change the way that you work. And if you can spend that time to address shifting your focus to customer retention and loyalty, and to maximizing the spend of your existing customers, that 20% of customers that are giving you 80% of your turnover, and then reducing the time spent on lead generation, a sales funnel with automation, better processes, better delegation, outsourcing. If you can do that, and then maybe even the hardest bit, get rid of the awkward customers that are spending you way. You know, if you start looking at your hourly rate on, you know, customer X versus customer Z, and you'll be like, yeah, we need to get rid of customer Z. I spend way too much time dealing with their complaints or with their awkwardness. So yeah, Pareto is a good one to look at.
Really good tip. Yeah, really good tip. But I can understand that might be quite hard to do. So is that something that you help your clients with if they need help with that? Is that something that you would do, or maybe that's more Andrew's
I'd imagine it probably falls more under a business coach. I mean, I love data and I love numbers, and, you know, marketing is all about looking at those things. So I've helped a couple of clients review that. I've done it within, you know, my previous job. We've reviewed that. But really, it's something you can do yourself. You can look at that inside and make sure that you are, you know, I would say it's a business basic. Really, which you should be doing each year is just reviewing, making sure your time is spent on the right customers, right? It's pretty clear. And actually, business basics, the last things I wanted to stick into the review was, are you doing the basics? Because they change every year. It used to be that social media was a novelty. We now know that that's a must for every business. And really, this year and the last couple of years, the basics that everyone should be doing is content marketing, making videos, user generated content, you know, encouraging your audience to get involved with what you're creating online. Those are the real basics this year that everyone should really be doing.
Excellent. Thank you. I think Andrew, you've got something to add to what Alex is saying.
Yeah, just for Alex, a Pareto principle, I agree. One of the first things I do when I start working with customers is fire those customers that are taking up all your time. Get rid of them, send them to your competitors. Great thing to do. So just a quick comment. Absolutely agree with that.
I love that. Send them to your competitors.
A new slogan for you, Alex.
Great. I like it.
Thank you, Andrew. Okay. So, Alex, you were talking there about video. A lot of people struggle with video or going live or being seen on camera, and we are recording the radio show on Zoom right now, but obviously nobody will be able to see us. What are your tips with that, because it, you know, that's definitely the digital age, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually funnily enough, I've delivered a bit of training on kind of, you know, being on video before. The main tip, without digging out my notes before, but the main tip is really practice. You know, you've got to rehearse. You've got to know what you're going to say. Write notes, write a script as if you are saying it for real. You know, you might have to change your written style. Get your notes right next to your camera and read them, you know, with genuine, you've got to become an actor at that point. But yeah, just practice. It doesn't have to be you on camera. Delegate to someone that can do it better or someone that's going to enjoy it. It doesn't have to be hugely in depth. I know people that just go live on Instagram and see if anyone wants to talk to them. And do you know what? Even if no one wants to talk to them, still all their followers will have got a notification on their phone saying Marketing 101 has just gone live. There's a brand awareness tip there. Right there, you've reminded every one of your followers that you exist, even if they don't click and look at your live. It's a notification on their phone, and those are priceless.
That's a really good tip, actually, because you're right. You know, I get notifications all the time about such and such is live, such and such is live. And often I forget that people are going to be getting that when I go live. I remember a very good friend of mine who is a videographer gave me a great tip about being on camera, because a lot of people don't like looking at themselves. So he said one of the things to do is to turn off your self view, so you're not looking at your own face.
Yeah.
But the other one is to actually put a post-it note or a piece of paper over the screen with your notes on it, and then just look at the dot, the light, or your camera. Because everybody thinks they're talking to you when you're looking straight down into the camera. They think that you're looking at them rather than looking down at your notes. So
absolutely.
Really useful, really useful tip.
Definitely. So
give me an idea for you. What do you think is going to be changing in marketing in 2022? Are there going to be some new trends coming?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing for me, there's three. Okay, number one, we already know about online is huge. We don't need to talk about it. It's grown so much, and it's not going anywhere. There are more people who have never knew how to shop online who were forced to through the pandemic. So if you're not already, embrace it. Figure out what your strategy is for growth. One of my clients launched a home delivery business. They're a fishmonger. They launched a home delivery service during the pandemic, and they are now looking how to expand that nationwide. So don't just sit on what you're doing. How can you expand? If it worked, if going online worked for you, then grow it more. But that's all we need to say for online, other than if you are selling, you know, products, physical products, groceries or gifts and gadgets, those kind of things, then there's more marketplaces than ever. A big trend, I think, is going to be these marketplaces where you can order multiple items from multiple different suppliers, and they'll all turn up in one batch, a bit like an Amazon, but for shopping locally. They're going to be a really great tool to jump on top of, definitely. But offline is more important, I think, for 2022. The real world is going to rage again. People are desperate to see each other, desperate to do the events and trade shows that they always used to do. So certainly if you used to do them, then get back to them. The ones I attended in the world of gift and toy during this year, I went anyway, even though I'd moved out of the industry. They were so busy. People were so much more, even more engaged than they were pre-pandemic. Everyone was really excited, and that wave will last a while. So exhibitions and trade shows, conferences, networking events, shopping centers, I think, and town centers are going to thrive. And again, if you've got physical product, there's loads of retail space opening up from, you know, Debenhams and people like that who have unfortunately been forced to shut down.
Yeah.
Lots of space to be taken.
Okay, that's really interesting, and it's really heartening to hear that the offline world is going to be just as good, in your opinion, as the online world. So Alex, if people wanted to get hold of you, what's the best place for them to contact you?
So I would Google Marketing 101. That's the easiest one. I generally come up tops. If you're in the Brighton and Hove area or Sussex, you're gonna find me. And you can also find me on LinkedIn, Alex Ryan brackets he him. That's me. Got my pronouns in there. And yeah, I guess that. Oh, and alexryanuk.com. That's a good place to go. I've got if you go /news, alexryanuk.com/news, I've got educational slots there, lots of videos of me giving away lots of information. I practice what I preach.
And a podcast too, I believe.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you listen to podcasts, go to wherever you listen to your podcast and search for Marketing 101, Big Steps for Small Businesses. And that is my podcast there.
Thank you, Alex. It's been really, really, really great, you guys, for having you on the Brighton Business Show for December 2021. This is Lisa Moore for the Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. And if you are a business owner looking to grow in 2022, then why not come on the Brighton Business Show and tell us all about it?